So with that, I'm going to hand it off to Eric for about 45 minutes of moderated discussion, and then we'll open it up for some audience questions. Thanks.
Thank you. Not too long ago, someone asked me, how can you write about technology from New York? And the assumption was that in order to write about technology, you had to be in California. So I'm really gratified to see a group like this here. I have a really kind of an open structure here. I mean, I have some subjects that I think the panelists and I have discussed, and not being necessarily the subject matter expert in all of them, but familiar enough with them to speak about them a little bit. I'm going to ask our distinguished panelists to kind of riff on the subject matter. And so the first thing that's pretty much on everybody's mind these days, I think, is the economy and the jobs picture. And specifically, you know, everybody in this room is either looking for a job or wondering whether they're going to hire someone. Bill put in right before we got started here. And so I think I could just start with Council Member Brewer. The latest, but first to jump in, and discuss a little bit about what your perspectives are, from your perspective, where things stand with the economy and the job picture in the city, and then we'll go to Bill and with Alfred.
Well, thank you very much. I'm certainly not the expert. This is a great expert role. I can tell you that there are 51 members of the city council, as you probably know, and the legislative body. And so as chair of technology, working with the Economic Development Committee, we've had actually two hearings on the issue of why aren't we California, why aren't we 128, another way of translating. And I think that we now have the Economic Development Corporation, and there are probably people here from EDC, and the administration realizing that there are a lot of barriers to not being 128, to not being California. And the question is, how do we overcome those? It could be the cost of doing business, for these small companies that are trying to grow in terms of technology, biotech, all the things that everybody in this room knows so well. And I think, certainly working, I think Ken is here for working with CUNY and the other universities, we really need to get those barriers to go away and focus. And one of the issues that came out of both hearings on the topic of why don't we have more support for technology companies, when I say that, it's the whole universe. I think one of the issues is we need more engineers, we also need less cost of business, but we also need to figure out ways that there's one person at City Hall who can answer the gazillion questions anybody has who's starting up. So that's just one example, I think, of what we're trying to do. And I think that in the next few months, I think you'll see a slight difference. It does take public hearing, and I think that's what we try to do in the council. We're not the place where you can get your contract, we're not the place that can make everything correct, but we can't air it so that the press and everybody in this room knows that you have a place to articulate the challenges and then hopefully changes are made.
Bill, now you were saying that, for one, jobs at Microsoft, is that right?
Well, not necessarily jobs at Microsoft, but to get ready for tonight, I think there are two things we want to talk about. One is technology, and the other is what it means to you as far as finding a job or hiring someone. So I did a little research, talked to my friends at Robert Half, who in turn had done some research with Forrester, did a little analysis of jobs posted the last 30 days on Dice.com. I had some beautiful statistics for you, but unfortunately they're in PowerPoint slides. No, Microsoft guys can't think without PowerPoint slides. What I'll do is I'll give it to Don so that they can be posted on the website. But effectively, the picture looks pretty good job-wise. There's a steady growth. It's better than it was. It's easy to believe, right, because nothing can be as bad as it was, I think. But the financial services industry is still recovering. There are a number of skills that are still in hot demand, like security people, for instance, are in very good, you know, very high demand. And also web developers that can build microsites and social networking sites. Also seeing a lot of startups, you know, because whenever there's a recession, people lose their job and try to go out and build the next YouTube or the next Facebook. We're seeing a lot of that. So that's kind of what we see and what some of the companies in the area say. Yeah, I tried to focus in on New York, not necessarily the whole country and the whole world.
Alfred, of course, my question is a little bit about jobs, but I kind of missed an important point. It's letting everybody kind of introduce themselves and what they're doing at Microsoft. So maybe, Bill, you can cover that, and then Alfred, we could pivot to you as well.
Sure.
Don pretty much described it. I spend most of my time talking to technical decision makers in companies that use Microsoft technology and potentially use Microsoft technology. I love the title Architect Evangelist. It has that Bible belting feeling. But effectively, that's what I do. I discuss and evangelize leading-edge technologies, new technologies, emerging technologies that are coming out of Microsoft or the Microsoft vision for technology. So I spend, I spend most of my time talking to architects, technical decision makers. I'm not really a salesman, I'm really a techie, but I'm an architect, so that's where I'm coming from.
So I guess there are many ways I could begin. First, in my role of being VP of Research for Google, but doing it from New York City, I want to affirm the technical vibrancy of New York City. I live in New York. We have the second largest Google technical facility at Google in New York City. It's the second largest engineering facility outside of Montreal. And we're here for a reason. We're not here because it's like all the restaurants. We're not here because we have a tremendous city or other reason. We're here because of talent. So there's an immense amount of talent in New York City. And that's what I think is going to continue to drive IT. So to us, that makes all the difference, 100% of the difference, and that's why we're here. And I think New York has often, throughout its history, I've been watching the Burns specials and other kids on New York, it's always been about entrepreneurship. And that's something that's very special to us, and I think essential to the future of high tech here. Now, that being said, the other aspect I think that is very important that we all have to realize is, and it's also been essential to the history of New York, is change. Right? New York changed dramatically after the Revolutionary War because it was basically burnt down during the Revolution. And we've had an enormous resilience towards embracing change. There's no question from my vantage point at Google that there is immense change going to occur in virtually every industry, particularly industries centered around information. That change is still going to happen. Even though IT is maybe 50 years old, we are still early in that trend. So there's going to be enormous change, and that's where job growth, excitement, productivity, value, this is something we're going to have. So I'll just give you a few examples. These are things that are to a large degree under my purview. Healthcare. So we see it across Washington, we see it almost every large university medical center. There is no question that not only biotechnology, but information technology is going to, and in fact must, dramatically change the quality and cost effectiveness of healthcare. We're right in the middle of that. It's going to take some time without doubt to achieve its full impact. But there's enormous opportunity there. New York City is clearly a center for healthcare. We must be involved in that. Google is involved in that as well. Second one is education. I play a large role in that as well at Google. Have any of you spent any time surfing the web looking for educational materials that are on the web? It's amazing how much is there for you. Just look at our property of YouTube. The number of self-help and good videos on YouTube for every possible purpose, ranging from teaching a kid mathematics, to teaching astronomy, to teaching business, teaching how to fix your faucet when it leaks. It's an amazing amount of stuff. If our mission is to organize the world's information and make it universally accessible and useful, I can't say we've necessarily been able to put together educational curriculum from this yet. But as we think about the opportunities to do that, to provide education to everyone based on these technologies, it's there. And we've just scratched the surface of utilizing these things. Last comment I'll make on this. But another part of it is government. So government is a big part of New York City. It's a big part of the United States. It seems to be a growing part. I read something about property values in Washington versus New York. It's clearly an opportunity to utilize technologies in government way beyond what we've done before. Certainly the kinds of measurement-oriented technologies that Google has been a proponent of and that the New York City has been a proponent of, ever more practical so we can understand what people need and how we're doing and measure ourselves. That's something that we can do ever increasingly well. In terms of providing services to people far more cost-effectively, there's no doubt that's feasible. And with really relatively good statistics, I think even in New York City, about the availability of internet access is quite good. It's not perfect. There are segments of the population, but there are very interesting studies coming out that show it's better than you might think. And I think over the next few years, with the advent of more smartphone technology and more computers that are even simpler, netbooks that use hard operating systems and other things, I think things will even get cheaper and more accessible and more manageable for the mass population at large. So the opportunity to do more government service direct to individuals is there. And we could talk more about that. But those are just three places where New York plays a big role, where I think technology is going to be disruptive, valuable, generate jobs, and value.
I just want to say one thing which is interesting. On the government side, yesterday I met with the head of technology for the Department of Education. We have 1,600 public school buildings in the city of New York. So give you the depth. And
1.1 million students.
Exactly. And the problem is, interestingly enough, we could have this great curriculum, which I know a lot of it is online, but the bandwidth going into 1,600 schools is a challenge. So when you're trying to have, you know, all your great yeah, I'm just giving it as an example. So what does he want in terms of capital budget? For me, we call it reservoir bandwidth. Just to give you an example of the kinds of things that we're up to.
Well, let's talk about broadband a little bit. It's something I've written about. And people tend to think that if you live in a large city, you're generally in a well-served area. I wrote a story for BusinessWeek.com a couple of years ago where I went out to a rural area and found the frustrations that small business owners have. But it's not just the second story I wrote in that series, the third actually, was focused on Harlem, where people didn't necessarily have access because of economic means. Sometimes availability was an issue. Broadband is clearly on the national agenda right now. The government is handing out $7 billion, which I think is practically just a drop in the bucket to really solve the problem. But Councilmember Brewer, talk to us about broadband in the city.
Thank you very much. Working with Kunal Mahatra and Sam Wong from our office and the administration, we put together the broadband advisory group. It was actually legislated, and then people were appointed through a very complicated process. And we went to all five boroughs, had hearings. It was really interesting. Our best hearing was in Staten Island. Was anyone here from Staten Island? I really appreciate it. More people came out, and more people were concerned. Healthcare was the number one issue in Staten Island in terms of needing broadband for healthcare. But I would say that at the same time, the Economic Development Corporation hired Diamond Consultants. I'm sure most of you know Chris O'Brien from Diamond, to look at this issue of who has it, how much does it cost, is it fast enough, etc. And I think right now we're working on putting all these pieces together. But I would say in New York City, the issue is that, yes, there are a lot of us who have some kind of broadband. It's not fast enough, which is what every small business trying to put together a website in Bedford-Stuyvesant, for instance, will tell you. At the same time, of course, the cost for a lot of families is too high. And I would maintain that even during the recession, it wasn't just a problem recession-wise, even before when we started doing hearings. We found that, again, I give great credit to the Department of Education, trying to deal with 1.2 million students, thousands of teachers, and so on. But actually, the students only spend maybe 2 hours a day actually using the computers themselves. And the fact of the matter is that you have the library issue. The libraries are the best resource in New York. They're like the jewel of New York City, but they're open 6 days a week, not seven, and not always a full 6 day. So the question is, and we're working hopefully with BTOP, which is what you just mentioned in terms of the federal funding, to get more money for the Department of Education so that it's a 24-hour opportunity for parents and children working on the homework and the home situation. And the same thing, trying to find places that are sustainable in the neighborhood to be able to have free access. That's sort of the top of the issue. And of course, there's all the economic development issues, small business, what speed, what cost, and all the issues that go with economic development. We always hear about places like North Carolina and all these other states, but we don't know where they are, but somewhere else. And New York, and parts, you know, just like the But we know that there are other states that are planning, and we actually sit on the planning group that the state has, working with Governor Patterson and so on, to try to think how to make the state have a better broadband plan. So that's the short version. So I think in some, we could say that there's a lot of connectivity, but it's expensive for a lot of families. They may not be getting to the lowest income, and we have to think of how to do that in a way that helps all families.
Now, is the city specifically seeking grants?
Yes, the city is seeking a $40.5 million, I call it Department of Education grant. We hope to hear about it in February if anybody has inside information.
The grant is started to provide computer access to middle school students.
It's actually all students and families working with some nonprofits. And then there's another city grant for what we call CTCs, for computer training centers. And I think there's some state grants also that are in the hopper.
Alfred, that sounded like...
So I think it's a... So you brought up a lot of issues. So one issue is, what do you need to run a web service? You brought up Austin Brewer. Is there enough bandwidth to run a high-performance web service somewhere? I would suggest, just as a technologist, I'm not actually sure that that's the most important question. These days, most web services aren't hosted in, on your 7th Avenue corner of such and such. And you need 10 megabits of bandwidth for internet lines. Most web services make sense to post at some web service organization that will be someplace else. So I think that this is going to be an impact on small business. So just a thought on that one. Well, that's changed. That wasn't true 12 years ago when one would find a Linux server, or Windows server, or something, and run something. But it is basically true today that most things are posted in a cloud somewhere rather than then the issue becomes what we really need for the general population, which we clearly do need there. And I don't exactly know, how to think of it, but I do know I've been trained in my time at Google to really think about what are the use cases that we need. Right? So are we really trying to provide high-definition video to absolutely everyone in the world, video on demand, high-def rates? Well, that would clearly be very high bandwidth. If we want to make sure that parents can follow their students' attendance at school and understand what their homework assignments are and get feedback on how they're doing, bandwidth requirements are frankly less. So I think that because of that, if we look at fitness to purpose and understand what's really needed so that we can provide services that are essential to the population, we may be closer than we think at doing what we need in New York. I certainly hope that's true because the benefits.
And then it occurred to me while I was writing the story, actually, that it was during the election period, and it occurred to me that if you didn't have access to, enough broadband speed in your home, you were kind of locked out from participating and keeping track of a certain aspect of the presidential election that was underway. You couldn't watch Barack Obama's speeches on YouTube, for instance, on a dial-up. You couldn't keep track. You can't keep track of what the president of the United States says now. In his speeches, unless you listen to the radio. But Bill, do you have a perspective on here?
No, I think that's a pretty pretty good analysis. I think that recently a science fiction writer named William Gibson was interviewed, and basically his comment to the interviewer was that the future's here, but it's not evenly distributed. So we tend to think of what we have as high speed bandwidth, but in this country and other countries, it's not necessarily ubiquitous. So I think that's really should be one of our objectives, is to make it ubiquitous.
One other question. I think also, I do think these mobile devices will be key. So a tool, that's certainly one of our bets, as you all know. The likelihood that, the number of people that are on iPhones or iPhones or other smart devices, they're all connected by multi-hundred megabits.
I do have to take a moment here. Alfred gave me too good an opportunity to promote our cover story by my colleague Peter Burroughs. The text is Apple versus Google, why can't they be friends? And it's got a picture of Steve Jobs and Eric Schmidt holding their respective thank you.
I think they are friends.
They are friends. I believe they are. And as most of you probably know, Eric Schmidt sat on Apple's board until this summer. So they've had a parting of the ways because of corporate issues, and I think Peter explained it well, but it's a very topical for discussion, I think. But the mobile devices is clearly, we just watched Eye from Afar, a lot of mobile devices emerging at the Consumer Electronics Show. Lots of attention on mobile phones, yes, but a lot of tablet devices, e-readers and so forth, netbooks, now smartbooks is a new category that seems to be emerging, lots of new operating systems, lots of new hardware platforms. Bill, I know you wanted to talk a little bit about this, and Alfred probably has some things to say as well.
Right. I agree completely with Alfred about this, the mobile phone. I think that Microsoft has a vision, phones have a vision, and our current vision is called three screens on the cloud, the mobile phone, the TV set, and the PC. And I guess, you know, we're basically predicting convergence of all of those. You've already seen TV commercials about the guy controlling his DirecTV from his mobile phone. Recently, Verizon started to put Facebook on their cable system. So we kind of see, in terms of content and in terms of protocols, a convergence of those, so that you won't necessarily use a remote control to control your TV, you might as well use your cell phone, and you can do that from work or at home. So we see that kind of convergence coming, and not in the long term, but in the reasonably short term.
From my perspective, I agree. You have to understand that we're still trying to get smart boards in the classroom. So it's when we hear about these things, we know that they exist in government, but you have to understand we've got to try to get them everywhere, and so we're always a little behind. And meanwhile, if you go to a classroom today, like one of my kids, he was in the Bronx, and last year, he's in college this year, and I said last year, so like when you were doing work, how did it go if everybody had video and that was part of your assignment? Oh, he said, forget it. You know, it was impossible. So we've got so much to go to get to what you're talking about. A few steps behind.
The thought occurs to me, though, in the classroom, it's entirely possible. I don't know what mobile devices kids tend to carry these days. Perhaps they're carrying iPhones, perhaps they're carrying lesser phones. But
they're not allowed to bring them into school.
Well, they're not allowed to bring them into
school.
Yeah, I mean,
it's a hard thing,
listening. So, like a calculator all over again.
Just so you know, if you're not in school, you have to leave your cell phone anyway, which could be your mobile device. Mm-hmm. In the bodega for a dollar, you have to store it.
Wow.
Just so you're not, so you understand what really goes on. So to bring the mentality of having this item that you could then bring to school and use as a telephone presents a problem.
But it could almost be the phones have reached a point where they could almost be a study aid.
You could tell if it's
Yeah. Well, three screens in the cloud, on television, that sounds kind of interesting. Reaching things on television. Can you talk a little bit about that third screen a bit more?
Sure. We have, at my television, we're also including the movie. And as you know, we have a lot of sort of online services, and we have a lot of devices out there. And we're seeing all of that converging. To the point where you might be able to browse the web on your Xbox. You can look at Netflix movies now on your Xbox, using your Xbox. So that's all part of that general convergence. I was really impressed with, I think it's Verizon Fios says Facebook. So you can surf Facebook from your TV set. So I kind of see that convergence continuing more and more.
So the question, I'll just try to make this a little more lively here. Where does that convergence end?
Yeah.
So if that convergence goes to its logical conclusion, we use all the bandwidth on the fiber for TCP/IP, then we have video on demand and video streaming over TCP/IP as in the popular services that are now available. So that's a very interesting question. The amount of my family, just as an example, we thought we were controlling television usage with my kids that are age 10, 10, and 9. And what we found out, of course, is that their computer usage was actually television usage because they were watching the Disney Channel, the equivalent thereof on YouTube. When I worked for Google, it was very hard to impugn YouTube at all. NBC was one thing, but YouTube was something else. So it's a very interesting convergence that's going to happen broadly. But again, this is a media center We have to find a way to embrace this in the media because there are tremendous advertising opportunities. There are tremendous opportunities to know and to know what people are interested in, what we should advertise to them, and why. That all can make this a far more entertaining and profitable industry, I think, for New York, if we look at this. I think convergence is going to go very far and with great simplification. Some people are, you know, they have, some people, you know, have all these different connections into their televisions and cable and over the air. And you can imagine throwing it all out and having one 802.11 wireless connection. And that's it. And it connects to your internet. I don't think that's necessarily a crazy deal.
And have the television actually be on demand via the internet.
Yeah, or other kinds of streaming. There's a lot of possibilities there. We weren't enough. I mean, a lot of things have happened to the internet. We have partnerships with many organizations. But where the long-term technology is, there's a lot of disruption. Where this disruption, New Yorkers have to say, this is an opportunity in the business and technology world for us to make a difference.
Well, you also brought up the cloud before when we talked about web hosting on the premise versus out in the cloud. And one of the questions that I wanted to try and tackle is the question, is the cloud secure? And I should also make a point of giving you, since the news has been about Google the last couple of days, that you're not going to talk about that. I'm not going to ask you about that. And you're not going to answer any questions about it.
I don't think I can add anything to what is already on the Google official blog, which I refer to.
That's a matter of corporate policy. But we do want to talk about the general topic of cloud security. I mean, companies are embracing the cloud, government is embracing the cloud increasingly, and we do have concerns about whether or not it's secure. Bill, do you want to tackle that one?
Yeah, sure. One of the things that amazes me is that no one seems like deja vu. If somebody had told me 15, 20 years ago that we'd be putting our payroll information in the cloud, I would have said they were crazy. And yet we all outsource our payroll to companies like ADP. I think, you know, it's a matter of knowing what you can outsource to the cloud and also getting legislation passed so that the laws catch up with the real world, because they always lag the real world. There are some information that you can put in the cloud, and there's some information that you'd be crazy to put in the cloud. The real demand is for people that know the difference and, you know, sorting out the difference. Leveraging, you know, Microsoft believes in software plus services, not just the cloud. You know, we believe in, you know, our on-premise stack, we believe in our cloud stack, and we even believe in hybrid applications, so that you don't necessarily have to put an application all in the cloud or an application all on-premise. You can build an application that leverages the best of both. And also from a security perspective, that leverages the right security requirements so that you don't necessarily put personally identifiable information in the cloud. Maybe you keep that on-premise, or you encrypt it in the cloud. You know, there's a lot of considerations. Security, talk saying, is the cloud secure, is too general. You have to drill down into requirements, I think, and be specific on what it is you're trying to accomplish.
So I'll turn this around a little bit and pose it this way. I think it's clear to all of us now that information sharing is an essential part of running our society. So we cannot have a walled enterprise. We did do that. I remember when I was a student at IBM, to get an email address required the approval of the head of the research lab in San Jose Research Facility. I couldn't believe it. But IBM was afraid that information going in and out of IBM would be either contaminating from the intellectual property perspective of IBM products, or information would leak out. So I think I can understand where that came from. Think of that, well, that's about 25 years ago. And now think of it today. You can't imagine denying an employee an email address with the right to talk to customers and business partners and the like, and way more. It's the messaging, email, right, video conference, and the like. So the flow of information across enterprises is a given. We've taken that as a given. I think that's where we all have to recognize there are inherent security challenges that are concomitant, that go along with this flow of information. I frankly think it's relatively incidental whether the data is stored encrypted in some cloud or encrypted on your server, I think those are not the big security risks. I think all the risks emanate from an architecture of a highly connected world. And that's a really interesting question as to how we're going to play all that. So one argument says, you know, at the extreme, we'll all give everybody access to everything and not worry about it, that doesn't work. The other argument says we're going to have extremely fine-grained security control on everything. I'll give this customer access to this product specification on this thing, I'll give that customer access to something else, and we'll have these very complicated, that doesn't work either. So we have architectural issues of how do we architect the future of society, of commerce, of education, of invention, to allow for the relatively free sharing of information. I think that's the real question. And I think this cloud issue is actually not, honestly, I don't think this is the risks architect of high market really interesting. Instead of extreme, give everything not work.
He joined Google in November of 2007 and is responsible for research across Google and a growing collection of special initiatives. We have Bill Zack from Microsoft. He's an architect evangelist with Microsoft, and his current focus is on architecting applications for the Microsoft Cloud. So I expect to see Bill intimately involved in LiDAR cloud computing interest groups. And we also have tonight Councilmember Gail Brewer, who has been representing the Upper West Side and Clinton in New York City Council since 2002. Councilmember Brewer chairs the Committee on Technology in Government, where she works to make better use of technology, save money, improve city services, and bring residents, businesses, and nonprofits closer together. So with that, I'm going to hand it off to Eric for about 45 minutes of moderated discussion, and then we'll open it up for some audience questions. Thanks.
Thank you. Thank you. Not too long ago, someone asked me, how can you write about technology from New York? And the assumption was that in order to write about technology, you had to be in California. So I'm really gratified to see a group like this here. I have a really kind of an open structure here. I mean, I have some subjects that I think the panelists and I have discussed, and not being necessarily the subject matter expert in all of them, but familiar enough with them to speak about them a little bit, I'm going to ask our distinguished panelists to kind of riff on the subject matter. And so the first thing that's pretty much on everybody's mind these days, I think, is the economy and the jobs picture. And specifically, you know, everybody in this room is either looking for a job or wondering whether they're going to hire someone. Bill put it right before we got started here. And so I think I can just start with Councilmember Brewer, the latest but the first to jump in and discuss a little bit about what you know, your perspectives are, from your perspective, where things stand with the economy and the job picture in the city, and then we'll go with Bill and with Alfred.
Thank you very much. I'm surely not the expert. This is a great expert role. I can tell you that there are 51 members of the City Council, as you probably know, and the legislative body. And so as Chair of Technology, working with the Economic Development Committee, we had actually two hearings on the issue of why aren't we California, why aren't we 128, another way of translating. And I think that we now have the Economic Development Corporation, and there are probably people here from and the administration realizing that there are a lot of barriers to not being 128 and not being California. And the question is, how do we overcome those? It could be the policy of doing business, or these small companies that are trying to grow in terms of technology, biotech, all the things that everybody in this room knows so well. And I think, certainly working with Ken is here, from working with CUNY and the other universities, we really need to get those barriers to go away and focus. And one of the issues that came out of both hearings on the topic of why don't we have more support for technology companies, when I say that, it's the whole universe. I think one of the issues is we need more engineers, we also need less cost, the cost of business, but we also need to figure out ways that there's one person at City Hall who can answer the gazillion questions anybody has who's starting up. So that's just one example, I think, of what we're trying to do. And I think that in the next few months, I think we'll see a slight difference. It does take public hearing, and I think that's what we try to do with the council. We're not the place where you can get your contract, we're not the place that can make everything correct, but we can't air it so that the press and everybody in this room knows that you have a place to articulate the challenges, and then hopefully changes are made.
Bill, now you were saying that, for one, jobs at Microsoft, is that right?
Well, not necessarily jobs at Microsoft, but... to get ready for tonight, I think there are two things we want to talk about. One is technology, and the other is what it means to you as far as finding a job or hiring someone. So I did a little research, talked to my friends at Robert Half, who in turn has done some research with Forrester, did a little analysis of jobs posted the last 30 days on Dice.com. I had some beautiful statistics for you, but unfortunately they're in PowerPoint slides. No, Microsoft guys can't think without PowerPoint slides. What I'll do is I'll give it to Don so that they can be posted on the website. But effectively, the picture looks pretty good job-wise. There's a steady growth. It's better than it was. It's easy to believe, right, because nothing can be as bad as it was, I think. But the financial services industry is still recovering. There are a number of skills that are still in hot demand, like security people, for instance, are in very good, you know, very high demand. And also web developers that can build microsites and social networking sites. Also seeing a lot of startups, you know, because whenever there's a recession, people lose their job and try to go out and build the next YouTube or the next Facebook. We're seeing a lot of that. So that's kind of what we see and what some of the easy areas say. Yeah, I tried to focus in on New York, not necessarily the whole country and the whole world.
Alfred, of course, my question is a little bit about jobs, but I kind of missed an important point. Is it letting everybody kind of introduce themselves and what they're doing at Microsoft? So maybe, Bill, you can cover that, and then Alfred, we could pivot to you as well.
Sure. Don pretty much described it. I spend most of my time talking to technical decision makers in companies that use Microsoft technology and potentially use Microsoft technology. I love the title, Architect Evangelist. It has that Bible belting feeling. But effectively, that's what I do. I discuss and evangelize leading-edge technologies, new technologies, emerging technologies that are coming out of Microsoft or the Microsoft vision for technology. So I spend, spend most of my time talking to architects, technical decision-makers. I'm not really a salesman, I'm really a techie, but I'm an architect, so that's where I'm coming from.
So let's see, so I guess there are many ways I could begin. First, in my role of being VP of Research for Google, but doing it from New York City, I want to affirm the technical vibrancy of New York City. I live in New York. We have the second largest Google technical facility at Google in New York City, the second largest engineering facility outside of Montreal. And we're here for a reason. We're not here because it's like all the restaurants. We're not here because we have a tremendous city or other reason. We're here because of talent. So there's an immense amount of talent in New York City. And that's what I think is going to continue to drive. So to us, that makes all the difference. All the difference. 100% of the difference. And that's why we're here. And I think New York is often... throughout its history, I've been watching the Burns special and other kids on New York. It's always been about entrepreneurship. And that's something that's very special to us, and I think essential to the future of high tech here. Now, that being said, the other aspect I think that is very important that we all have to realize is, and it's also been essential to the history of New York, is change. Right? New York changed dramatically after the Revolutionary War because it was basically burnt down during the Revolution. And we had an enormous resilience towards embracing change. There's no question from my vantage point at Google that there is immense change going to occur in virtually every industry, particularly industries centered around information. That change is still going to happen, even though IT is maybe 50 years old, we are still early in that sector, in that trend. So there's going to be enormous change, and that's where job growth, excitement, productivity, value, this is going to be added. So I'll just give you a few examples. These are things that are, to a large degree, under my purview. Healthcare. So we see it across. across Washington. We see it almost every large university medical center. There is no question that not only biotechnology, but information technology is going to, and in fact must, dramatically change the quality and cost effectiveness of health. We're right in the middle of that. It's going to take some time without doubt to achieve its full impact. But there's enormous opportunity there. New York City is clearly a center for healthcare. We must be involved in that. Google is involved in that as well. Second one is education. I've played a large role in that as well at Google. Have any of you spent any time surfing the web looking for educational materials that are on the web? It's amazing how much is there today. Just look at our property at YouTube. The number of self-help and good videos on YouTube for every possible purpose, ranging from teaching a kid mathematics, to teaching astronomy, to teaching business, teaching how to fix your faucet when it leaks. It's an amazing amount of stuff. If our mission is to organize the world's information and make it universally accessible and useful, I can't say we've necessarily been able to put together educational curricula from this yet. But as we think about the opportunities to do that, to provide education to everyone based on these technologies, it's there. And we've just scratched the surface of utilizing these things. Last comment I'll make on this. But another part of it is government. So government is a big part of New York City. It's a big part of the United States. It seems to be a growing part. Given I read something about property values in Washington versus New York. It's clearly an opportunity to utilize technologies in government way beyond what we've done before. Certainly the kinds of measurement-oriented technologies that Google has been a proponent of and that the New York City has been a proponent of, ever more practical so we can understand what people need and how we're doing and measure ourselves. That's something that we can do ever increasingly well. In terms of providing services to people far more cost-effectively, there's no doubt that's feasible. And with really relatively good statistics, I think even in New York City, about the availability of internet access is quite good. It's not perfect. There are segments of the population. But there are very interesting studies coming out that show it's better than you might think. And I think over the next few years, with the advent of more smartphone technology and more computers that are even simpler, netbooks that use hard operating systems and other things, I think things will even get cheaper and more accessible and more manageable for the mass population at large. So the opportunity to do more government service direct to individuals is there. And we could talk more about that. But those are just three places where New York plays a big role, where I think technology is going to be disruptive, valuable, generate jobs, and value.
I just want to say one thing which is interesting. On the government side, yesterday I met with the head of technology for the Department of Education. We have 1,600 public school buildings in the city of New York, to give you a depth. And
1.1 million students.
Exactly. And the problem is, interestingly enough, we could have this great curriculum, which I know a lot of it is online, but the bandwidth going into 1,600 schools is a challenge. So when you're trying to have, all your great programs. I'm just giving it as an example. So what does he want in terms of capital budget for me, we call it resume bandwidth? Just to give you an example of the kinds of things that we're up to.
Well, let's talk about broadband a little bit. It's something I've heard about. And people tend to think that if you live in a large city, you're generally in a well-served area. I wrote a story for BusinessWeek.com a couple of years ago where I went out to a rural area and found the frustrations that small business owners have. But it's not just the second story I wrote in that series, the third actually was focused on Harlem, where people didn't necessarily have access because of economic means. Sometimes availability was an issue. Broadband is clearly on the national agenda right now. The government is handing out $7 billion, which I think is practically just a drop in the bucket to really solve the problem. But Councilmember Brewer, talk to us about broadband in the city.
Thank you very much. Working with Kunal Malhotra and Sam Wong from our office and the administration, we put together the broadband advisory group. It was actually legislated, and then people were appointed through a very complicated process. So we went to all five boroughs, had hearings. It was really interesting. Our best hearing was in Staten Island. Was anyone here from Staten Island? I really appreciate it. More people came out, and more people were concerned. Healthcare was the number one issue. It's gotten out of, in terms of needing it, needing broadband for healthcare. But I would say that at the same time, the Economic Development Corporation hired Diamond Consultants, I'm sure most of you know Chris O'Brien from Diamond, to look at this issue of who has it, how much does it cost, is it fast enough, et cetera. And I think right now we're working on putting all these pieces together. But I would say in New York City, the issue is that, yes, there are a lot of us who have some kind of broadband. It's not fast enough, which is what every small business trying to put together a website in Bedford-Stuyvesant, for instance, will tell you. At the same time, of course, the cost for a lot of families is too high. And I would maintain that even during the recession, it wasn't just a problem recession-wise, even before when we started doing hearings. We found that, again, I give great credit to the Department of Education, trying to deal with 1.2 million students, thousands of teachers, and so on. But actually, the students only spend maybe 2 hours a day actually using the computers themselves. And the fact of the matter is that you have the library issue. The libraries are the best resource in New York. They're like the jewel of New York City, but they're open 6 days a week, not seven, and not always a full 6 day. So the question is, and we're working hopefully with BTOP, which is what you just mentioned in terms of the federal funding, to get more money for the Department of Education so that it's a 24-hour opportunity for parents and children working on the homework and the home situation. And the same thing, trying to find places that are sustainable in the neighborhood to be able to have free access. That's sort of the top of the issue. And of course, there's all the economic development issues, small business, what speed, what cost, and all the issues that go with economic development. We always hear about places like North Carolina and all these other states, but we don't know where they are, but somewhere else. New York or Cartoon. Just like New York. But we know that there are other states that are planning, and we actually sit on the planning group that the state has, working with Governor Patterson and so on, to try to think how to make the state have a better broadband plan. So that's the short version. So I think in some, we could say that there's a lot of connectivity, but it's expensive for a lot of families. It may not be getting to the lowest income, and we have to think of how to do that in a way that helps all families.
Now, is the city specifically seeking grants?
Yes, the city is seeking a $40.5 million, I call it Department of Education grant. We hope to hear about it in February if anybody has inside information.
The grant is started to provide computer access to middle school students.
It's actually all students and families working with some nonprofits. And then there's another city grant for what we call CTCs, computer training centers. And I think there's some state grants also that are in the
hospital.
Alfred, that sounded like...
So you brought up a lot of issues. So one issue is, what do you need to run a web service? I mean, you brought up... is there enough bandwidth to run a high-performance web service somewhere? I would suggest, just as a technologist, I'm not actually sure that that's the most important question. These days, most web services aren't hosted in, on your 7th Avenue corner of such and such, and you need 10 megabits of bandwidth for internet lines. Most web services make sense to host at some web service organization that will be someplace else. So I think that this is going to be an impact on small business. So just a thought on that one. That's changed. That wasn't true 12 years ago when one would find a Linux server or Windows server or something and run something. But it is basically true today that most things are hosted in the cloud rather than on a particular machine. Then the issue becomes what we really need for the general population, which we clearly do need here. And I don't exactly know how to think of it, but I do know I've been trained in my time at Google to really think about what are the use cases that we need. Right, so are we really trying to provide high-definition video to absolutely everyone in the world, video on demand, high-def rates? Well, that would clearly be very high bandwidth. If we want to make sure that parents can follow their students' attendance at school and understand what their homework assignments are and get feedback on how they're doing, bandwidth requirements are frankly less. So I think that because of that, if we look at fitness to purpose and understand what's really needed, so that we can provide services that are essential to the population, we may be closer than we think to doing what we need in New York. I certainly hope that's true because the benefits are huge.
And it occurred to me while I was writing the story, actually, that it was during the election period, and it occurred to me that if you didn't have access to, you know, enough broadband speed in your home, you were kind of locked out from participating and keeping track of a certain aspect of the presidential election that was underway. You couldn't watch Barack Obama's speeches on YouTube, for instance, on a dial-up. You couldn't keep track. You can't keep track of what the president of the United States says now in his speeches unless you listen to the radio. But Bill, do you have a perspective on here? That
no, I think that's a pretty, you know, pretty good analysis. I think that, I guess, recently a science fiction writer named William Gibson was interviewed, mm-hmm. and basically his comment to the interviewer was that the future's here, but it's not evenly distributed. Mm-hmm. So we tend to think of what we have, you know, as high-speed bandwidth, but in this country and other countries, it's not necessarily ubiquitous. So I think that's really should be one of our objectives, is to make it ubiquitous.
One other fact, I think also, I do think these mobile devices are the future. So at Google, that's certainly one of our bets, as you all know. The likelihood that, you know, I ride the subway every morning, the number of people that are on iPhones or iPhones, other smart devices, they're all connected by multi-hundred megabit links. People are watching video on their
I do have to take a moment here. Alfred gave me too good an opportunity to promote our cover story by my colleague Peter Burroughs. The text is Apple versus Google, why can't they be friends? And it's got a picture of Steve Jobs and Eric Schmidt holding their respective thank you.
I think they are friends.
They are friends. I believe they are. And as most of you probably know, Eric Schmidt sat on Apple's board until this summer. So they've had a parting of the ways because of corporate issues, and I think Peter explained it well, but it's a very topical for the discussion, I think. The mobile devices is clearly, we just watched Eye from Afar, a lot of mobile devices emerging at the Consumer Electronics Show. Lots of attention on mobile phones, yes, but a lot of tablet devices, e-readers, and so forth. Netbooks, now smartbooks is a new category that seems to be emerging. Lots of new operating systems, lots of new hardware platforms. Bill, I know you wanted to talk a little bit about this, and Alfred probably has some things to say as well.
Right. I agree completely with Alfred about the mobile phone. I think that Microsoft has a vision. Phones have a vision. And our current vision is called three screens on the cloud. The mobile phone, the TV set, and the PC. And I guess, you know, we're basically predicting convergence of all of those. You've already seen TV commercials about the guy controlling his DirecTV from his mobile phone. Recently, Verizon started to put Facebook on their cable system. So we kind of see, in terms of content and in terms of protocols, a convergence of those. So that you won't necessarily use a remote control to control your TV. You might as well use your cell phone. And you can do that from work or at home. So we see that kind of convergence coming, and not in the long term, but in the reasonably short term.
From my perspective, I agree. You have to understand that we're still trying to get smart boards in the classrooms. You know? So when we hear about these things, we know that they exist in government, but you have to understand we've got to try to get them everywhere. And so we're always a little behind. And meanwhile, if you go to a classroom today, like one of my kids, he was in the Bronx, and last year, he's in college this year, and I said last year, so like when you were doing work, how did it go with everybody had video and that was part of your assignment? Oh, he said, forget it. He never, it was impossible. So we got so much to go to get to what you're talking about. A few steps behind.
The thought occurs to me, though, in the classroom, it's entirely possible. I don't know what mobile devices kids tend to carry these days. Perhaps they're carrying iPhones, perhaps they're carrying lesser phones. But
they're not allowed to bring them into school.
Well, they're not allowed to bring them into school again.
Yeah, I mean, it's a hard thing, listen.
So, like a calculator all over again.
Just so you know, if you're not in school, you have to leave your cell phone anyway, which could be your mobile device. Mm-hmm. In the bodega for a dollar, at the store. Just so you're not, so you understand what really goes on. So to bring the mentality of having this item that you could then bring to school and use as a telephone presents a problem.
Because it could also, it could almost be, I mean, the phones have reached a point where they could almost be a study aid.
You can tell since
yeah. Well, three screens in the cloud, on television, that sounds kind of interesting. Reaching things on television. Can you talk a little bit about that third screen a bit more?
Sure. We have, and by television, we're also, I'm also including the movie. And as you know, we have a lot of sort of online services, and we have a lot of devices out there. And we're seeing all of that converging to the point where you might be able to browse the web on your Xbox. You can look at Netflix movies now on your Xbox. Using your Xbox, so that's all part of that general convergence. I was really impressed with I think it's Verizon Fios says Facebook, so you can surf Facebook from your TV set. So I kind of see that convergence continuing more and more.
So the question, I'll just try to make this a little more lively here. Where does that convergence end? So if that convergence goes to its logical conclusion, we use all the bandwidth on the fiber for TCP/IP, and we have video on demand and video streaming over TCP/IP, as in the popular services that are now available. So that's a very interesting question. The amount of my family, just as an example, we thought we were controlling television usage with my kids that are age 10, 10, and 9. And what we found out, of course, is that their computer usage was actually television usage because they were watching the Disney Channel or the equivalent thereof on YouTube. And I worked at Google. It was very hard to impugn YouTube at all. NBC was one thing, but YouTube was something else. So it's a very interesting convergence that's going to happen broadly. But again, this is a media center. We have to find a way to embrace this in the media because there are tremendous advertising opportunities. There are tremendous opportunities to know and to know what people are interested in, what we should advertise to them, and why. That all can make this a far more entertaining and profitable industry, I think, for New York, if we look at this. I think convergence is going to go very far and with great simplification. Some people are, have all these different connections into their televisions and cable and over the air, and you can imagine throwing it all out and having one 802.11 wireless connection. That's it. Mm-hmm. It connects to your internet. I don't think that's necessarily a crazy idea.
And have the television actually be on demand via the internet?
Yeah, or other kinds of streaming. There's a lot of possibilities here. We weren't enough up. I mean, a lot of things have happened to the internet. We have partnerships with many organizations. But where the long-term technology is, there's a lot of disruption. Where this disruption, New Yorkers have to say this is an opportunity in the business and technology world for us to make a difference.
Well, you also brought up the cloud before when we talked about web hosting on the premise versus out in the cloud. And one of the questions that I wanted to try and tackle is the question, is the cloud secure? And I should also make a point of giving you, since the news has been about Google the last couple of days, that you're not going to talk about that, I'm not going to ask you about that, and you're not going to answer questions about it.
I don't think I can add anything to what is already on the Google official blog, which I refer to.
That's a matter of corporate policy. But we do want to talk about the general topic of cloud security. I mean, companies are embracing the cloud, government is embracing the cloud increasingly, and we do have concerns about whether or not it's secure. Bill, do you want to talk about that one?
Yeah, sure. One of the things that amazes me is that it almost seems like deja vu. If somebody had told me 15, 20 years ago that we'd be putting our payroll information in the cloud, I would have said they were crazy. And yet we all outsource our payroll to companies like ADP. I think, it's a matter of knowing what you can outsource to the cloud and also getting legislation passed so that the laws catch up with the real world, because they always lag the real world. There are some information that you can put in the cloud, and there's some information that you'd be crazy to put in the cloud. The real demand is for people that know the difference and, sorting out the difference. leveraging. Microsoft believes in software plus services, not just the cloud. You know, we believe in our on-premise stack, we believe in our cloud stack, and we even believe in hybrid applications, so that you don't necessarily have to put an application all in the cloud or an application all on-premise. You can build an application that leverages the best of both. And also from a security perspective, that leverages the right security requirements so that you don't necessarily put personally identifiable information in the cloud. Maybe you keep that on-premise, or you encrypt it in the cloud. You know, there's a lot of considerations. Security, talk saying, is the cloud secure? It's too general. You have to drill down into requirements and be specific on what it is you're trying to accomplish.
So I'll turn this around a little bit and pose it this way. I think it's clear to all of us now that information sharing is an essential part of running our society. So we cannot have a wall that divides. We did do it. I remember when I was a student at IBM, to get an email address required the approval of the head of the research lab in San Jose Research Facility. I couldn't believe it. But IBM was afraid that information going in and out of IBM would be either contaminating from the intellectual property perspective of IBM products, or information would leak out. So I can understand where that came from. Think of that, well, that's about 25 years ago. And now think of it today, you can't imagine denying an employee an email address with the right to talk to customers and business partners and the like, and way more. It's messaging, email, and the like. So the flow of information across enterprises is a given. We've taken that as a given. I think that's where we all have to recognize there are inherent security challenges that are concomitant, that go along with this flow of information. I frankly think it's relatively incidental whether the data is stored encrypted in some cloud or encrypted on your server. I think those are not the big security. I think all the risks emanate from an architecture of a highly connected world. And that's a really interesting question as to how we're going to play all that. So one argument says, you know, at the extreme, we'll all give everybody access to everything and not worry about it, that doesn't work. The other argument says we're going to have extremely fine-grained security control on everything. I'll give this.
Amazing speakers, and to say that I hope that you'll pay attention to what goes on locally in New York City, because we would love to have your input. There's a group of us who have been looking at trying to open up government, and I could use your help and really, really appreciate the ideas that are here. I think government, unfortunately, we have a $60 billion budget in New York City. People don't realize that. It's United States, State of California, State of New York, and then New York City. And we're bigger than all the other states and half the countries in the world, just in terms of our budget. So things go slowly, but we can't forget the folks that need the services the most in some cases, and that's really what my job is. So thank you.
I think this is a great time to be alive. I think I'm very optimistic about the future. I do see that we need to make the technology that's available to some of us who are favored a lot more broadly available and evenly distributed, to the point where these kids can use their cell phones, the politics and the laws and everything are lined up so that they can take advantage of the technology to learn. So I think we're living in great times.
Well, my comment, I think, is just there's a tremendous change. There's tremendous opportunity associated with it in the field, certainly related to computer science, which we follow so much in Google. We're not at the end of the learning curve here. We're right at the sweet spot where things are accelerating. So it's an amazing time in that regard. There's amazing opportunities for people. We are hiring broadly, so if you know smart people, not just interns. I think the industry is going to be hiring again broadly because there's just an immense opportunity in these telecommunications and computation and storage systems that, when networked together, add so much to everything we can do as a race.
That's an encouraging thought.
Thanks, everyone. Thanks to everybody for attending. Thank you.